Hey, welcome in everybody from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here live at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony, training camp. It's gotten really real to me in the last 24 hours with the schedule being released.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you kind of know it intellectually, to see it in print that the Jacksonville Jaguars, today being July the 8th, on August the 8th, will be playing a preseason game versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep.
It's going to be here in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, we're inside of 5 weeks, 4 weeks from Friday, so 31 days you can go watch them take on somebody else. Even less time than that. Obviously, we'll have the scrimmage coming up here in August as well. Before that first preseason game, we got the dates on camp yesterday as well. We know now when this team will be in pads for the first time. It makes the question of, well, how exactly are they going to pull off this Bartram Trail thing on that Monday a little bit easier, because they're not having to take the pads. They're not in pads yet by the time they go and make that trip over to Bartram Trail. But, look, yeah, it was an exciting day yesterday. As I said last night on the show, the coverage that we gave you during this offseason, the mini camps, the OTAs, look, that was nothing compared to what's coming down the pipe. You know, here in the next month or so when we finally get into training camp and into a season for the Jacksonville Jaguars and the things that we plan to do to cover this team. It's going to be awesome. And we hope that you're enjoying it early on in our partnership with the Jags as the official flagship station of them. And it will only get better from here.
Now, don't count me among those who was concerned about how will they get the pads to Bartram Trail. They managed to get them to London. I think they would have figured out a way to get them to Bartram Trail, for goodness sake. So that never was much of a concern to me. But 9:55 a.m., to me, I don't know. I mean, now, football has become more about, to some degree, to protecting these guys, to keep them out of, you know, and I get it, obviously. You know, it's not the Junction Boys or whatever. You send them out there with no water.
Here's
but
a salt pellet.
I want these guys to practice at like 2 in the afternoon, 2 to 4, or whatever you deem to be the hottest part of the day. And that's your home field advantage early in the season, is those couple of games you get at home, 1 o'clock kickoffs at Everbank, is where your home field advantage kicks in, because you should be used to it by then. But regardless, 9:55 a.m. for most days, starting on the 25th. Which Little Bird tells me is Lauren Brooks' birthday. So
how about that?
Turning 23 years young on the 25th of July. Coming up, I got my first spit take of the day from Lauren.
That one I couldn't hold back.
I'm gonna wipe my ear out right now.
Yeah, you know what it does though, when you practice at 10 a.m., especially with the practices that are going to be open to the public. I think it makes sense to put them that early in the day, because then you're not having to deal with, is the weather going to be a factor? Do
That's
we have to
true.
Cancel these? So the fans who made plans to come out on this day, it's easier for them if they know. At 9:55, the odds of you getting rained out are much smaller than if you practice at 2 in
you're
the afternoon.
You're so freaking logical with this whole situation that I'm not pleased to overlook that. But you're probably right about that. Scrimmage, August 2nd, Saturday, August 2nd. So they'll basically have been in camp for about a week and a half, and they'll have the scrimmage, which will be open to the public, which has become a tradition here at the stadium. Your first chance to see them kind of in that semi-game atmosphere, so
sure.
to speak. And
come
then,
out and see Blake.
And then just a week later, less than a week later, they'll be playing the Bucks at 7:30 right here at Everbank. So on we go. And the season, from that point, it'll just be a march right towards opening week.
That is crazy. It's 4 weeks away.
It's coming, man.
The preseason getting started. I saw yesterday, Monday, being 9 weeks from yesterday is the first slate of Monday night when they do the doubleheader. So, you know, we're inside of 9 weeks from the NFL regular season getting underway. Every year the offseason flies by, this one even more so.
Every year I lobby for, not that I really lobby anyone for it, but I always bring up the fact that Monday night doubleheader every week would just be so spectacular.
Oh, I know.
Even maybe 4 times a year. You don't have to do it every single week, but I love the Monday doubleheader. This is a little bonus football, which means if it's 9 weeks to Monday from this past Monday, we're basically 8 weeks to the start of the football season.
Yep.
Right? To that Thursday opener.
Thursday, yeah.
And it's Seattle's hosting, is it Green Bay? Who are they hosting?
Denver, I thought.
Is it, oh, that's right. It is. Super Bowl rematch.
Yeah.
For the opener. So, 8 divisions, 8 weeks. We're going to start today. In the AFC North, we'll take a team a day from now right up until practically the beginning of football season. Do one division every week, and we'll just find out what the lowdown is with that particular team.
Not, no, it is Green Bay. You had it.
Is it Green Bay?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so much smarter than you today. or even, put it that way. I just drew back to even. But no team more interesting or in the news right now than the Cleveland Browns.
No.
With the Manziel, Flapp, with Josh Gordon. I mean, those guys have managed to make their owner, who at any day could be indicted for some kind of shenanigans for his whole pilot flying J business doings. That's me putting a broad brush on a story I don't know all the details about. Totally put that on the back burner.
Yeah.
And these guys have run away with the headlines. So we'll talk with Andre Knott, who's a longtime sideline reporter for the Cleveland Browns, coming up in about an hour and 10 minutes from now. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight coincides, trying to avoid using dovetails, with the ESPN Sports Nation poll. For every team, they give you three nominations for the top most memorable play in franchise history. And you and I are going to go through some of these teams and try to figure out if we can at least come up with which plays should be on the nomination list for these teams in our memories, at least. Certainly some of the history and the legacy of these franchises is going to go beyond our memories reach. But today, the question being, to you as a Jag fan, what's the most memorable play in Jaguar team history? We've done similar conversations before. We've done certainly what's the most important play in Jaguar team history. You're going to get a lot of the same answers, but if you want a chance to win a Jaguars Today t-shirt, tweet us today at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren. Use the hashtag Jaguars Today. Simply tell us what is to you the most memorable play in Jacksonville Jaguar team history. You can also go to Facebook.com/Jaguars Today and weigh in with your thoughts there. When we return, phone lines will be open to you at 641-1010 throughout the program, but we'll go through some of the other teams in the AFC and try to see if we can come up with some of the most memorable plays in their franchise's history and see what ESPN Sports Nation offered up as examples of that. Andre Knott, Cleveland Browns sideline reporter, going to join us in about an hour and 10 minutes to get into what has been definitely an eventful offseason for the Browns. We'll talk Baltimore Ravens football tomorrow, Cincinnati Bengals a little bit on Thursday, and the Steelers on Friday as we wrap up the AFC North in the first of our division previews. With that, Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars Today, just kicking off on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
2 hours spent on two things, your Jags and the rest of the NFL. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hello, friends. This is Jim Nantz of CBS Sports.
I'm Marvin Lewis.
This is Archie Manning. You're listening to 1010XL.
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 92.5 FM.
All right, Tony, I'm going to need to rely on you once again.
Oh.
What you got? Anything?
For what?
For the theme. There's got to be a theme. Every day there's a theme.
Oh, this is Coldplay.
It is.
Clocks. Tony, don't sound so excited, by the way.
Clocks by Coldplay. I'm guessing something to do with the fact that we're a month away from the Jags preseason opener. Anything to do with that, Lauren?
It is not.
Time ticking away
but
until I go
guess.
On vacation.
Good guess. I like all these guesses,
on
but
the clock.
You're wrong.
No? All right.
But way, keep guessing.
Have you seen the movie Cold in July yet?
No.
I think it's called Cold in July. It might be Cold in June. I don't know why it was called either one of those, by the way. I don't. But it really had nothing to do with the plot of the movie.
It took place in September, and it was warm.
Right. It was like boiling out the whole time. But I watched this on demand last night. You know, I'm watching Murder in the First on Monday nights, which is a good flick. And mm-hmm. I was telling you a minute ago, they're quite the potty mouths on this this program. After 10 o'clock, it's like all bets are off now.
TV has changed.
Yes, yes. And it really has. And I'm like listening to these words that don't really offend me. And I'm like, boy, I'm glad my son has been in bed for a while when this comes on. But it's a very good show. Tay Diggs and the chick from 90210, whose name I'm too lazy to look up. Couldn't tell you. She's not one of the original ones.
I'm going to Google that she dated Brandon.
I think she did date Brandon on the show. I'm sorry, Lauren. Excuse me for knowing that. I grew up, and during a certain period, I don't know how old I was when that show was in its heyday, but I watched 90210 back in the day. I just don't talk about it like Hacker talks about Saved by the Bell or Saved by the Bell the college years. Either one. Anyway, Cold in July, Tony, is what we're going with. Mm-hmm. Watch this last night on demand, and it's got Michael C. Hall. Do you know who Michael C. Hall is?
Yes.
It's Dexter.
Yeah.
Right? And we're like, Michael C. Hall, you mean from the Breakfast Club? Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, that's Anthony
of
Michael.
Course. And then we spent 15 minutes trying to remember that guy's name last night. But anyway, interesting little flick. Sam Shepard and Don Johnson, of all people,
really?
Are in this movie. So I'd like you to watch it at some point.
Cold in July.
Cold in July.
And okay, I've got
you,
info.
I want you to recap that for me on a future episode of the Fat Tony Show.
Okay.
On your movie reviews on Monday night.
See what I can do.
Lauren's got a 90210 update for us here.
Her real name is Kathleen Robertson, and she was Kelly Taylor in 90210.
Was she? Well, Kelly was Jenny Garth. What did Jenny Garth play? What was her character's name?
You're asking too many questions.
You had Brenda.
Don't look at me.
And you had the other ones, Donna, right? Donna, right, was Tori Spelling.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Doesn't matter. She's she's a cute girl with the short hair. Anyway, she's a cop on Murder in the First. Good show. A little potty mouth action going on, but if you don't mind the potty mouth, you'll enjoy it. Murder in the First, Monday nights on TNT. Now you're all caught up. All right, Tony, let's go around the National Football League, shall we? Sports Nation, determining the most memorable play. You and I have not looked at these.
No.
It was our mission to not look and try to determine. We can pretty much figure out what the Jags may be. We'll talk about them a little bit later on. That's the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. Tweet or post on Facebook your reply, most memorable play in Jags history, for a chance to win a Jaguars Today t-shirt. Let's go team by team. We haven't looked. See if we can at least nail one that's on each of these three-play nominee lists.
Oh, it's a three-play nominee?
Each team has three plays nominated, and then folks can vote in the Sports Nation fashion.
Okay.
Which, all kidding aside, I think the Sports Nation polls are pretty fascinating when you can break them down, you know, kind of by state, what the percentage is, and you can see where the biases come in on all the polls. Let's stay in the AFC South, or start there with the Tennessee Titans. Music City Miracle.
The Miracle, yeah.
Number one play?
Yeah, I would think so.
Does coming up short in the Super Bowl factor in as... Is that play, Kevin Dyson getting tackled a yard short of the end zone?
Are they combining Tennessee and the Oilers? Like, is it one
entity?
That's
who they are. They are. I'm sure they are. It's franchise. I mean, there's got to be some Earl Campbell run where the jersey's falling off of. Music City Miracle, there's no question that's on the list, though.
Yeah, it's got to be the play that wins, I would think.
I would think it probably does win. All right, let's look. Music City Miracle, Kevin Dyson getting tackled at the one-yard line, and Dan Pastorini... pass to Mike Renfro, ruled not a TD catch in the 79 AFC title game. Probably playing the Steelers back then.
I would assume, yes. Yeah.
Bum Phillips is always talking about kicking in the door next year. He was the great wait till next year guy as the head coach back then, father of Wade. The Colts.
The Colts.
Unitas gives to Amici, and the Colts are the champions of the world. Right? I mean, come on. The greatest game ever played, right?
Sure. That could be on there. Manning to Stokely
Peyton
for number 49.
Peyton getting picked by Tracy Porter going the other way.
I got a feeling that'll be on the Saints list. no, Manning to Stokely for number 49, I would think, would be on there. The pick in 06. I can't remember who. Was it Vontae Davis that picked Brady to seal the deal in the AFC title game?
May have been. Here, let me give them to you here. This is the Colts' top play. I'm assuming now this does not take in... Let's see. It says this is one of the three nominations for most memorable play in Colts history dating back to when they moved to Indianapolis. Well, that's...
So Baltimore's
that's
out.
That's no fun. All right. Marlon Jackson intercepted Brady.
Okay.
With 24 seconds left. Andrew Luck to T.Y. Hilton, 64-yard TD, brings the Colts back
last
from 28
year.
Down. Peyton Manning hits Stokely for his 49th TD, so I'll give us credit for that one. You got that
one. And a half.
The United gives to Amici, and the Colts are the champions of the world, I guess, is now in the dustbin of history. Doesn't even count
anymore.
Does
it go anymore. With Baltimore?
I can't go with Baltimore. It's a different franchise. They must only be counting the Indianapolis Colts version of it, I suppose.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't get it as far as that goes, because clearly the Titans use the Oilers, but regardless. Houston Texans, what do they have memorable?
They won their first game. Maybe there's a play from that.
Didn't they go for it in overtime to win it? They beat Miami in their first game.
The play is going to be the J.J. Watt pick six in the playoffs. That's
good
the
call.
Play. Maybe Andre Johnson.
Now let's see what we got. Watt pick six. Sage Rosenfeld's fumble leads to Gary Brackett's 68-yard TD return. Texans lose.
That's
awful.
Nice.
That's one of your three most memorable plays. And Billy Miller's TD, first in franchise history, helps the Texans to their first win in history. I'll give you double credit for that one, because you got the first game and you got the J.J. Watt pick. So I would say we've hit at least one out of each. Let's go to the AFC East.
Okay.
The tuck play. Let's go with the Patriots. The
Pats.
Doesn't the tuck play have to be one of the most memorable plays in the franchise history? Vinatieri beating the Raiders.
Yep. I mean, Vinatieri could be all three, honestly, with what he's done for
right.
that franchise. The big spots that he's come through.
Is one of the most memorable plays the David Tyree catch against them?
No.
It's definitely on the Giants.
That'll
list.
Be on the Giants one. I don't know. Outside of what they've done here in the last handful of years, I don't know what would be.
All right, here we go. Tuck rule game.
Uh-huh.
They just said the tuck rule game, Adam Vinatieri's 45-yard field goal
maybe
ties the game.
Maybe the throw to Moss to break Peyton's record.
Oh, the snowplow play. Remember the snowplow play? They beat the Dolphins, I want to say, 3-0 on that play. Is that how that works? Mark Henderson snowplows a spot for kicker John Smith to hit the game-winning field goal. Patriots win 3-0. I want to say that was against Miami, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm.
in the snowplow game. And then Vinatieri's field goal that beat the Rams. For the Dolphins.
Fake spike.
The fake spike's a good one. The hook and ladder play in the game against San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? I don't remember who was involved in that play.
Something from that undefeated season.
You remember that play right before halftime? They scored a touchdown against the Chargers. They're down like 24-0 in that game. Came storming back and then ultimately lost it, in the end. Let's see what we got here. Fake spike. Don Strock passed Doriel Harris, who laterals to Tony Nathan. There's your hook and ladder. And Greg Camarillo catches a touchdown in overtime to defeat the Ravens when Miami went 1-15.
Oh, to avoid.
That was to avoid 0-16. I guess that's pretty memorable. For the Jets, I can think of a lot of misery.
You got Namath, the guarantee. Yeah. That's not really a
play. Is that a play? Are they gonna try to get away with that being a play?
I mean, that is the Jets, though. I mean, the lasting image of the Jets is Namath with that one in the air.
I mean,
that's the Jets.
Oh, totally. And they've had such little success over the years. I mean, to me, most of the things that stand out in my mind are losses. And,
right.
Oh, I'll give you one. Wesley Walker catching the Hail Mary or the deep pass. It wasn't that really a Hail Mary, just a bomb from Ken O'Brien to beat Miami in that game that went up and down the field. This was like an 87. Some ridiculous, like 51-45 or some ridiculous score like that.
Bart
Remember?
Scott, can't wait!
Let's see if I got, let's see. Oh, the butt fumble.
How
you didn't come up with that first. The fake spike is on there. The Monday Night Miracle when the Jets come back. Jumbo Elliott tied the game with a TD catch.
That is so
Jets. Two of the three are negative plays.
That was just so Jets.
That went against them. And for Buffalo, what do you got for Buffalo? O.J. Simpson goes over 2,000 yards.
The Norwood miss.
Definitely the Norwood miss. That's got to be. That's the most
probably
memorable
the play. Yeah.
Scott Norwood, the Music City Miracle, which happened against them as well.
Man.
And Don Beebe running down Leon Lett to force a fumble.
Nice.
Right. Every single one of those is a loss. Nothing good coming out of any of that stuff. Let's go to the AFC West and see what you got. Let's see who they've got at the top, so I don't have to scroll past some of the other answers. Let's go with the Denver Broncos. Elway helicopter.
The Elway helicopter. Who did he hit the big touchdown to?
He hit Rod Smith for an 80-yarder.
The forced fumble, the drive against Cleveland, and whether it's going to be that drive or the fumble they forced, I'm not sure which it'll be. But.
All right, well, I think we got enough to get something here. Let's see. Elway dives for an 8-yard gain. That's the helicopter. Tom Jackson, 73-yard interception return TD in week 11, secures win and home field advantage. Doesn't even give the year. And Elway to Shannon Sharp for 18 on 3rd and 6, secures the 97 AFC title and Elway's first Super Bowl trip.
Okay.
Helicopter game. San Diego Chargers, got to be something from that same game against Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the blocked field goal. Kellen Winslow blocked the field goal.
Yep.
I want to say in overtime. In that game, getting carried off the field, something about that whole thing. It's probably something about Lance Allworth in there.
Yeah, they had the comeback win, and was it the 08 playoffs? I can't remember who against when Rivers was there. But, yeah, I don't know.
All right, let's see what we
got.
Hadn't
been a whole lot recently.
Let's see what we got for the Chargers. Kellen Winslow blocked field goal to send the game. That sent the game into overtime. It was field goal to win it for Miami, and Kellen Winslow blocked it. In addition to catching like 13 passes. Dennis Gibson knocks down a Neil O'Donnell pass to clinch the 94 AFC title game. Hope Frank's listening. And LaDainian Tomlinson scores a 7-yard TD to break the single season record, his 29th touchdown. Kansas City Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Oh, what was the play? Christian Okoye got absolutely destroyed. Who was the, Steve Atwater destroyed Christian Okoye. That's not exactly a Chief highlight. However, boy, what do you got for the Chiefs?
Derek Thomas.
Derek Thomas had like, how many sacks did he have in a game? Didn't he have like 6 or 7?
It was something like that, yeah.
Like single game record. I'll go with that. And who else, are we, missing? The Raiders.
It's the immaculate reception.
It's the ghost of the post. It's the holy roller. The holy roller's number one. Holy roller's got
I wouldn't be surprised if they had the immaculate reception.
Marcus Allen, Super Bowl run.
Oh, man, what a run.
Ken Stabler flips the ball to Clarence Davis for the game-winning TD and the Holy Roller all on there with Dave Casper eventually recovering that for a touchdown. Let me see what the Chiefs had here. They had Mike Garrett's 5-yard TD run in Super Bowl IV gives the Chiefs a 16-0 lead. We all remember that. Otis Taylor's 46-yard catch and run for a TD secures their win in the same game. That's not a good sign. They're going with two highlights from the same game. And Montana to Willie Davis touchdown on
playoffs.
Monday Night Football. That was a Monday night game against John Elway. So,
really?
Yeah.
Kansas City. That's the best
you got. It was like a fourth quarter comeback against the... Right. That doesn't seem
and
like...
Even your fans are lame. For a team with that much heritage, the fans are voting on what plays should be nominated for this.
Are the fans voting on what should be nominated? I think
Sports Nation
picked three. Maybe they did. Let's do the AFC North real quick. And Pittsburgh Steelers is the immaculate reception.
Yeah.
Let's just see if we can get something from all of them.
Lynn Swann climbing.
Yeah, Lynn Swann, right. The whole acrobatics and all that. So we got something from Pittsburgh.
Baltimore is probably the throw to Jacoby Jones. Miracle a couple of years ago.
Josh Carney has ruined you on their pronunciation.
I would say probably the interception, the pick six for Ray Lewis in 2000 when he took that ball from Eddie George.
I want to say something about Dilfer to Shannon Sharp. Didn't he have like an 80-something yard touchdown in the AFC title game?
He might have.
Something along those lines.
They had the kick
and
return
then,
in the game
anything
against
anything involving
the
a limousine
too.
In Atlanta. No?
Yeah, Jermaine Lewis had a kick return for a touchdown that sealed the deal for them in 2000. That may be on there.
Do the Browns have any positive memories?
Maybe. None that I...
There's got to be something about one of those games.
None in my mind.
The fumble
I mean,
or the drive have to be in
there. The fumble has
to be in there in terms of being memorable. And then for the Bengals, the icky shuffle, or would it be like John Taylor scoring to beat them in the Super Bowl?
That's probably on there.
Honestly, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm sure they have a storied history. Immaculate reception for the Steelers. James Harrison, I was at that one. Returned the interception 100 yards on the final play of the first half in the Super Bowl, and the same game, Santonio Holmes with the game-winning touchdown. That's interesting. Out of all Steeler history. Three most memorable plays came from that game against the Arizona Cardinals, just a few years ago. Bengals, John Taylor's catch. Yes, baby. Stanford Jennings returns a kick for a touchdown in Super Bowl 23. Taylor catches a game-winning TD. Corey Dillon scores on a 41-yard touchdown, breaking the single-game rushing record with 278 yards. Let's see. Mile High Miracle, Flacco to Jacoby Jones. There you go. Jermaine Lewis returns the kickoff, and Ray Lewis rips a pass away from Eddie George.
3 for 3,
you
baby.
You killed the Ravens and the Browns. Lou Groza kicks the game-winning field goal in 1950.
Holy crap.
In the NFL championship game. Gary Collins scores the first of three TDs from Frank Ryan in the 64 championship game.
Oh, Cleveland.
And then the fumble. So... we had that one covered as well.
Cleveland, it was glorious in 1964.
Yeah, so there you go. Your most memorable games in Browns history. We'll take a look at the NFC. Share with us your most memorable play, not games, most memorable play from the Jags for a chance to win a Jaguars Today t-shirt. We'll give that away at the end of the program today. Also talk with Andre Knott, longtime Cleveland Browns sideline reporter, on the whole mess that seems to be going on. A lot of unwanted attention this offseason in Cleveland. Doesn't mean they won't play well on the field, but they'll do it likely without the services of Josh Gordon for a long, long time. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguar football starts here.
Take care of the ball. Both hands on the rock.
We are live at the stadium with breaking Jaguars news.
89.
The best Jags coverage is on 1010 XL 92.5 FM, home of the Jaguars.
Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you at the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios, live from Everbank Field. Jaguars today, a month away from the first preseason game. What are you?
This is offspring.
Concocting?
Keep them separated.
It is.
And we had Coldplay clocks.
Let me give you a little hint. This is Keep Them Separated, but also called Come Out and Play.
Oh.
Before you get off track.
It's something, we decided it's not training camp. It's not like a countdown to training camp. Did we not?
It's not. I thought this one was going to be really obvious. Wow.
I thought with
I'm impressed.
Coldplay and Keep Them Separated, are we honoring the McDonald's McDLT from years
no.
ago?
No. It's Coldplay and Offspring Come Out and Play.
So play.
Play 60. Let's play 60, kids. Go outside and exercise.
What's the topic of today?
The best plays in...
There we
go.
So
what's the topic? What's the theme?
Plays.
I'm kidding.
Oh.
Plays. Mike, it's plays.
What
it's
is it?
Coldplay and Come Out and Play.
Death of a Salesman. All right.
Now you got it.
I'm still not sure. I'm still not sure. No, I'm not. I'm not that dense. I just play that dense on the radio sometimes. Foundation Professionals of Florida, one of our newest sponsors, Tony, starting to get some submissions in the Patriotic Jaguar contest. Every week, Foundation Professionals of Florida is asking you, the Jaguar fans, who they feel are the foundation of the Jacksonville Jaguar organization, to submit a photo based on a theme that we come up with. And this week's theme is Patriotic Jaguars in honor of the Independence Day weekend that just passed. And it could be whatever that means to you. Could be you in a Jaguar jersey waving an American flag. Could be whatever you think it is. And we've had a lot of creative submissions on that. Send us your pictures. Either tweet them to us. There's a thread up on the Jaguars Today Facebook page where you can post the pictures right in there. Every week we'll pick a winner, and that winner will go into a drawing for a pair of tickets to the home opener versus the Colts.
Cool.
If your home's foundation is letting you down, you know your home is your greatest investment. You want to protect it. The engineers and specialists at Foundation Professionals of Florida are your full-service foundation repair company. You need to know the symptoms. Exterior and interior wall cracks, windows and doors sticking, foundation cracks, sloping floors. All these can be signs of much bigger problems. You want to call 287-2690, and Foundation Professionals of Florida will come out and check out your foundation. Make sure everything is safe because your investment needs to last you a long, long time. Give them a call today, 287-2690, or visit foundationprosfl.com. That's P-R-O-S-F-L, foundationprosfl.com. Patriotic Jaguars, the theme this week. We'll choose a winner on Friday. Actually, Tony will choose a winner. I'll leave it in your steady hands. And next week, haven't determined what the theme will be, but every week you got a chance to become a finalist, secure a pair of tickets to the home opener versus the Colts down the line. Today, taking a look at the most memorable plays in every franchise's history in the National Football League. Can we get through the entire NFC in the next 7 or 8 minutes? Let's give it a try. Starting in the NFC East, Tony, I think is where we're going to start right now. And what's New York Giants? Let's start with your squad. David Tyree, right?
Yeah.
What about Manning to Manningham?
Maybe the Lawrence Taylor pick six on Monday Night Football with the torn pec. Maybe
what about
on
breaking Theismann's leg?
That could.
I'm just throwing a few out there. I think Tyree is the no doubter.
The Norwood miss maybe on there, honestly.
To win him a Super Bowl,
as big as that was, and
all right, well,
it's not really a play, but that entire maybe Jeff Hostetler taking the safety should be on there in that game as well.
Let's go through every team, then we'll look at the results here. For the Redskins, I would think John Riggins' run on 4th-and-1 against the Dolphins in the Super Bowl, I would think is number one. At least it stands out to me. Anything else from the Redskins that leaps out at you? Something fun bunch related? I don't know. I would think that one is top. Maybe Theismann getting his leg broken is on their list.
Maybe there's a Darryl Green play.
Probably
somewhere
so.
That I'm just not thinking of, or Art Monk.
All right, let's go to the Eagles. Miracle at the Meadowlands, 1-2.
Yeah.
Right? Pisarcik with the fumble that got scooped up by Herm Edwards on basically the last play of the game, and then D-Jax returning the punt with no time left on the clock. How'd that one work out for the Giants?
Yeah, Matt Dodge, kick it out of bounds, son.
Anything else from the Eagles? McNabb throwing up on the field here at Altel.
I said
the
Freddie Brown.
Freddie Mitchell.
That's,
yeah. That
was a 4th-and-forever.
It was like 4th-and-29 or something like that. Where did they convert that? In the title game against Green Bay, was it?
It might have been
the divisional round.
Yeah.
Right. And then who are we forgetting? The Cowboys. Leon Letts, either one of Leon Letts plays. The original Hail Mary was Staubach to somebody or other, and it escaping me who it was at the time. I want to say Billy White Shoes Johnson was like Bartkowski threw one for the Falcons to him that was kind of famous in their history. All right, let's roll down and see. Anything else from the Cowboys before I look? Here we go. We've got for the Redskins, Riggins run in the Super Bowl. Darryl Green, punt return against the Bears in the 87 playoffs, and Darryl Grant, interception return against the Cowboys in the 82 playoffs. Don't remember that one.
No.
Let's see. Tyree's catch for the Giants. Lawrence Taylor breaks Theismann's leg, and the first miracle at the Meadowlands for the Giants, interestingly enough, is among their most. The same one, both miracle at the Meadowlands plays, and Wilbert Montgomery, 42-yard TD run in the 80 NFC title game for the Eagles. The Hail Mary, Staubach, it was Drew Pearson who caught that. Aikman, 70 yards to Alvin Harper in the 92 title game, and Bob Lilly sacks Bob Greasy in Super Bowl VI. Okay?
Yeah.
Must have been a hell of a sack.
He sacked him.
I mean, honestly, right? One of the three most memorable plays
Collision
in franchise history. Let's go to the North. Let's go Detroit Lions. I'm going to say Barry Sanders had those two 80-plus yard touchdown runs in the same game.
Barry had was it against Dallas that he had the run that was just ridiculous where he broke something like 9 or 10 tackles?
We'll go with Barry Sanders highlights for the Detroit Lions,
yeah,
I would think.
Calvin Johnson with the catch over the triple or quadruple
triple
team,
coverage, yep.
Whatever that was, is probably on there.
Let's see. Packers. Man, there's a... probably a billion of them from their championship games that you and I have not a whole lot of clue about.
You got to think, I would think Favre to Rison is on there.
Is it, was Rison the big play? Trying to think with Brooks and Freeman and all those guys.
I thought it was Rison. It might have been Desmond Howard.
What about Desmond Howard's punt return?
Could be.
I'm going to say Desmond Howard's punt return in the Super Bowl.
And they probably, they might have something from this most recent Super Bowl, too. I don't remember the big play in that.
Who else? Chicago Bears.
The Fridges
scores
touchdown.
How sad is that if that's one of the three most memorable plays in their history?
You got to have something with Walter Payton, but I don't know what
you would
be.
Think. Walter Payton, I want to say, had a game where he ran for 275 yards. That may have been the record that Corey Dillon broke originally. And then who are we getting? The Vikings. Wrong way Marshall.
The missed field goal.
Oh, yeah. Missed field goal after you haven't missed one all season long.
Yep.
Against the Atlanta Falcons. All right. Calvin Johnson, TD despite the triple team. Barry Sanders, breaks against the Cowboys, breaks, and then Dan Orlovsky runs out of the back of the end zone for a safety. Nicely played, Lions. Let's see. That was Gary Anderson's missed field goal.
Uh-huh.
Tommy Kramer to Ahmad Rashad with no time left. Tracy Porter intercepts Brett Favre with 19 seconds left in the NFC Championship game as well. Tracy Porter's had some big-time picks.
Yeah.
Favre to Rison in the Super Bowl. The Ice Bowl. Bart Starr sneaks in from the one to win the Ice Bowl, and Aaron Rodgers connects with Greg Jennings on 3rd and 10 to clinch the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The Fridges TD for the Bears. Walter Payton breaking several tackles against the Chiefs, gained 20 yards. Really?
Nice.
Wow.
That's the play. Walter Payton.
And Devin Hester opens up the Super Bowl with a touchdown return.
Please. They got killed in that game.
What else am I looking at? We already did the Pack. The Lions, we did. Why is this? The Vikings. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. The Vikings. No, we already did the Vikings. We hit them all.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's go to the South real quick here. Bucks.
Derek Brooks.
Yeah.
Pick six in the Super Bowl.
I mean, what else are you going to have but that Super Bowl? Who won MVP? Wasn't a former Florida State guy who won MVP?
Yeah, it was the safety, Dexter Jackson.
Dexter Jackson. There's something from Dexter Jackson in there for the Bucks, and maybe something from them starting like 0-20, whatever they, 26 or whatever they started.
Sure.
Saints.
The Gleason block punt
is number one. And they'll say, I guarantee you, Tracy Porter's pick
Porter
or Peyton
pick,
Manning.
And you got the ambush, the onside kick.
What about their crazy return against the Jaguars that led to a missed extra point?
I doubt those are bigger than those three.
Falcons, Barkowski to Billy White Shoes Johnson.
You know, the Falcons, the only play that comes to my mind when I think the Falcons is Michael Vick defying gravity against Minnesota in overtime. That's the play.
I'm sure there'll be something about Mike Vick in there.
The play I'm talking about where it was like, how could he possibly keep his knee off the ground and he stretched that ball out to get into the end zone in overtime? Oh, it's an incredible play.
Panthers.
Steve Smith in double overtime with the touchdown.
Oh, good one.
To beat Dallas. You know what they're probably going to have on there for Carolina? That Super Bowl against New England. I forget who their kicker was, but kicked it out of bounds.
Was it Casey? I think it was Casey.
It might have been Casey, but kicked it out of bounds to put the Patriots in position.
Put him at like the 40-yard line, and that's when Brady went down the field and set up Vinatieri's next game winner.
That's there.
Who are we forgetting there in the South? We did New Orleans. We said the Falcons. Why the Bucks? We got them all, right?
We got them all.
All right, let me see. Let me jump over there and tell you. And then we got the NFC West to wrap it up. Let's see what we got. If this would scroll down. Panthers, Foster's one-yard run against the Eagles. Let's see. Steve Smith, 69-yard TD catch in double overtime. Deshaun Foster breaking four tackles to score in the NFC title game, and John Casey's kickoff going out of bounds. That's a great call right there. Morton Anderson kicks a 38-yard field goal in overtime to defeat the Vikings.
Okay.
It was Alfred Jackson. Okay, for some reason I thought it was Billy White Shoes Johnson. Maybe that was I don't know who that one was. But Alfred Jackson catches a tip pass from Steve Bartkowski for a TD. I'm pretty sure that's the one I'm thinking of. And Vic runs for a 46-yard touchdown to win in overtime.
It was crazy.
Let's see. Saints. The ambush onside kick.
Yeah.
To start, yeah. The onside kick, Tracy Porter and Steve Gleason blocking the punt. And the Bucks, Rondae Barber, interception return against the Eagles, Derek Brooks, and then 77-yard reception by Joe Juravicius.
Oh, I remember that play.
In the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Wow, still. Bucks, Joe Juravicius is your most. I tell you what, we got a break. We'll come back with this date in football. We still got to do
the
NFC West, and we'll get to some of your submissions for the most memorable plays in Jaguar history. Andre Knott, longtime Cleveland Browns sideline reporter, set to join us. In about 28 minutes or so, we'll take a look at the Browns all season, an eventful one with Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon grabbing a lot of the headlines. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
By this date in football history, brought to you every day by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Tony, what was PFT yesterday at like 11 o'clock, right? They helpfully posted a story that would have been great for this date in football history yesterday, but they posted it late in the day about how a bunch of guys, I want to say 20, 25 years ago on yesterday's date, went in the first round. Who was it? Steve Walsh, right? Was the Miami quarterback. Remember, they had drafted Troy Aikman number one.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Johnson was there, and he had coached Steve Walsh at Miami. And they spent, after drafting Troy Aikman, spent a first-round pick in the supplemental draft on Steve Walsh the very next summer, and then you know, cost him the following year's first-round pick. But ultimately, they were able to flip him to New Orleans for three picks, including a first-rounder. So that worked out pretty well. But the first-round pick that they gave up for Steve Walsh ended up being the number one overall pick because they went 1-15.
Right.
So, you know, I forget. I don't know if the story said who went. It probably did. Who went number one overall? I can't remember. But today, happy birthday, Jeff Kopp, former Jacksonville Jaguar, born on this date. If I had it up in front of me, I would tell you that he was born in 1971. So Jeff Kopp, 43 years young today, played for the Jags for a few seasons in the early years. And Lauren passed along a little tidbit of information about Notre Dame. Notre Dame, Lauren, again, I'm having trouble bringing this up in front of me. What was the what happened to Notre Dame in the 1950s on this date? Do you recall what you...
I don't recall, so hang on one second.
Sent along to me. Here it is. Man, kind of... You can hear the dial-up almost kicking in right now. There it goes. Beach!
1953. You got it now?
That was my modem connecting. Notre Dame announced that the next 5 years of its football games would be shown in theaters on closed-circuit television, Tony. So 1953, I guess Notre Dame, that was the precursor to NBC... basically becoming the Notre Dame Sports Network.
Ugh.
Right? Closed circuit TV.
That was not a good noise out of Tony.
Back in, are you a Notre Dame hater?
I am.
Why?
Because
it's an anti-Catholic sentiment with
no,
you?
No, it's
or
not
what?
An anti-Catholic
just
sentiment.
Kidding.
I actually my grandfather was a Notre Dame fan. He was brought up Catholic, whatever, and there was a point in time in this country where Notre Dame was one of the few teams you could see every weekend. I despise...
Either loved them or hated them, right?
I despise the deal with NBC. I hate it. I can't even describe how much I hate it. I understand that that's not... shouldn't be enough to get you to just hate a university, but it bothers me. I think Notre Dame does a lot of things right, but I can't get past the NBC thing and not being affiliated with the conference. I just can't.
I'm with you, Tony.
He has a low threshold for what he hates. Back. Also,
the Notre Dame Broadcasting Network.
Do you remember this? Major League umpire Steve Palermo and former NFL defensive lineman Terrence Mann were shot trying to help two waitresses from being robbed on this date in 1991. Do you remember that?
No.
I vaguely remember that with Steve Palermo. Terrence Mann is the character's name in which movie? Which sports movie?
You
know it.
I do. It's
That's right.
He was James Earl Jones.
He was Darth Vader's alter ego in...
Yeah, in Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams, Terrence Mann, very nice. I wonder if there was any homage.
Baseball Ray.
Oh, it's fantastic. What's James Earl Jones' most notable role? Think it's Darth Vader, or do you think...
Vader? Is it the Snake King in Conan? My favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Let's move on.
I think it's The Sandlot.
I doubt it's a Sandlot. Martineau probably agrees with you, however. His all-time favorite movie, I believe, we determined, was The Sandlot.
Because it's phenomenal.
It's got to be Vader.
It was on the other day. And I don't watch it when it comes on, but I don't know. My son would have no idea. Of course, he would have no idea it was James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams either.
Right.
But, like, he watches every Star Wars movie over and over and over again, and he has no idea who James Earl Jones is.
Yeah. Doesn't make the role less iconic.
No, the role's very iconic, but do people associate him with that role more so than Field of Dreams or anything else?
I know I do. Like,
yeah.
When I hear him in anything, I'm like, oh, there's Vader. Like, that's the first thing that goes into my head.
All right, this date in football history, that's what we were talking about, is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, Call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. 10% off for all first-time customers' initial visits. They're a certified Invisalign provider. And in the meantime, just stop by jamesjmccall.com and get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. They bring you this date in football history here on Jaguars Today. Right around this time every day, Tony, let's take a look at the NFC West. Most memorable plays in every team's history for those four teams. Seattle Seahawks, I would argue Marshawn Lynch breaking the Richter scale against New Orleans.
You got and that?
Is that the best run you've ever seen? I mean, there's some ankle breakers that guys like Barry Sanders put out there. Go one, boy.
I've never seen a better run.
I don't know if I've ever seen a better run, period.
I think going back to some of the stuff I saw Barry Sanders do, maybe better, but nothing on the scale of what was going on.
Barry made you look stupid. And, you know, Barry was so low to the ground, he'd plant and set, and guys would be flying past him, and he'd be barely moving because people were terrified to make a move on Barry Sanders because he'd make you look foolish. I would say they don't show much positive about him anymore. Go look at some film, if you can find it, on O.J. Simpson.
Oh, he was ridiculous.
He probably had 10 or 12 runs that were just like where his big thing was the complete cutback. He'd be running up one way, and he'd cut back laterally across the flow of the defense. And just at top speed for a guy his size, a little bit surprised that O.J. wasn't on the Bills' list of most memorable plays. All right, so I'd say Marshawn Lynch.
Trying to forget O.J.
Would something, Richard Marshall relate, or with the breakup against, I mean, they just won the Super Bowl.
The tip back last year in the NFC Championship game is probably in there, with Sherman tipping it back into play.
Right.
To seal the deal. Beyond that, I don't know.
I mean, Percy Harvin running back the kickoff is probably the single play that I remember most from this year's Super Bowl. Safety on the opening play. But if there's one play, if you ask me to name a play from that game, I would name Percy Harvin's second half kickoff.
I mean, unless they just won the Super Bowl, so I doubt they would include any of the controversial plays from that game against Pittsburgh.
What about speaking of controversy? What about Golden Tate's touchdown?
The Golden Tate, yeah.
Yes, you said it, not me. All right, San Francisco 49ers, the catch one.
The catch two.
The catch two with Terrell Owens from Steve Young and John Taylor. If those three aren't the top three, I don't know what is. I guess we'll find out momentarily. Who are we forgetting? The
Arizona
Rams.
Arizona and St. Louis still.
The Rams have to be the tackle at the one-yard line.
Tackle at the one-yard line, was it?
Mike Jones?
It was Mike Jones on the tackle. Who had the big play? Was it Isaac Bruce that caught the long touchdown?
Isaac Bruce caught the bomb
in
that game. And Kurt Warner threw for over 400 yards in that game. I believe the only time a Super Bowl quarterback's done that. Those would probably be in there. At least, certainly the tackles got to be in there, you would think. I mean, that play, never has the Super Bowl come down to one play as much as it did in that instance, with 1 yard determining the outcome either way. And what about the Arizona Cardinals? Assuming they don't go back to St. Louis, because the Colts didn't go back to Baltimore on theirs. This is all, if you go to ESPN.com, Sports Nation's doing a poll for every team.
The interception against Green Bay in the playoffs in that game that was just going back and forth.
Oh, that was a crazy shootout of a game.
But they finally got the pick off Rodgers, and that sealed it for them.
Would there be something from Jake Plummer when they beat Dallas in the playoffs back in
the late 90s? Yeah.
Something in there, maybe.
Maybe.
Something from Fitzgerald. You could argue something in that Super Bowl that James Harrison's return against them has to be one of the most memorable plays in their history, or giving up the touchdown to San Antonio Holmes.
And Fitzgerald scored the go-ahead touchdown for them, right?
Yeah.
And then Pittsburgh came back down.
I think we threw a blanket over. Let's see what we got here. The Seahawks, Beastquake, that's Marshawn Lynch. Steve Largent hits Broncos' Mike Harden following an interception, causing a fumble. Got me.
Sweet.
And then Sherman's deflection against Crabtree are your top three. Let's see. Cardinals top plays. Kurt Warner to Fitzgerald for the touchdown in that game. Carlos Dansby returns a fumble for a touchdown in overtime to defeat the Packers in a wild card playoff game. And Tim Hightower gained 6 yards on 4th-and-1 on a game-winning drive in the 08 NFC title game. Really?
Okay.
Okay, Tim
if you
Hightower.
You say Tim did.
Thank you, sir. My favorite, by the way.
Oh, you Richmond Spiders.
Arizona Cardinal plays were the 3 1-yard touchdowns that Mario Bates scored in a playoff game that won me in a weird fantasy league where we were playing into the playoffs.
That was with you and Joe, right?
Me and Joe Cowart, we were co-owners of a team on our way to a championship that year. We beat the Randy Moss team when Randy Moss was a rookie that season. And the guy had, like, Randall Cunningham and Randy Moss on the same team, and they were unbeatable all year long. And we played in this stupid system where you went into the playoffs for your actual playoffs, and you picked up guys, like, you dropped anybody who didn't make the playoffs, you picked up guys who were left, and the only running back with a pulse left was Mario Bates to have. And he scored, he had 4 carries for a total of 3 yards, 3 1-yard touchdowns. God bless you, Mario Bates. 49ers, the catch 1, the catch 2, John Taylor. There you go. We had that one. All right. And finally, Mike Jones tackles Kevin Dyson at the 1 to win the Super Bowl. Isaac Bruce's 73-yard catch from Kurt Warner, and Warner hits Ricky Prohl for a game-winning TD against the Bucks in the 99 NFC title game. I think we covered them all. By the way, score that game.
Which
against
game?
The Bucks. Greatest show on turf versus that Buccaneer defense. I want to say it was 12-7.
It was low scoring.
12 seems like an odd winning score when we just saw Ricky Prohl score a touchdown. I don't know if they would have had a safety in there. Or
I think they probably went for 2.
Or went for 2 and didn't
make it. To make it a 7-point game.
Maybe they had kicked a couple of field goals, went for 2, something along those lines.
Yeah.
I want to say that game was 12-7. I'll dig it up somewhere along the line. All right, we got a break. We'll come back with Andre Knott, a longtime coverer of the Browns, including a longtime sideline reporter for the Cleveland Browns. He's up in Cleveland with WTAM, and we'll get the latest on Johnny Manziel, Josh Gordon, and company. Coming up, it's Jaguars today. Taking a look around the AFC North this week right here live from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today, 1010XL 92.5 FM. And for the next 8 weeks, we'll take a division every week. Leading you right up to the start of the football season. You'll follow along. You'll be like, wow,
just
it's here.
8 weeks.
8 weeks, and they'll be playing real football, Tony. A month from today, 4 weeks from Friday, Jags and the Bucks with the preseason opener. It's getting here. It's going to get here quicker than you realize, and your summer will be gone. Football will be upon us. Let's talk a little AFC North this week. We'll start with Andre Knott up in Cleveland, who is, a self-described, busy man. He's a sports reporter at WTAM 1100, WEWS Channel 5 up in Cleveland, longtime Brown sideline reporter as well, and a longtime correspondent with our various shows here. Andre, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. It's nice to talk some football with all this talk about some basketball player.
Yeah, well, right. Which basketball player are you referring to? We have no idea. What?
He's a kid from Akron, but he's made his residence down in Miami for the last couple of years.
Cupcake store update today.
You guys,
that is the craziest thing ever. I'm in the newsroom and I'm saying we're going to cupcake stores now. What the heck is going on?
You guys are the epicenter of the sports world, man. Between that guy and Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon lately, I mean, is Jimmy Haslam the happiest guy in the world because his business has been off the front page for months now?
That's a great point. You know, and I think that's part of the issue with the Browns. And by the way, the Browns don't have a lead PR person right now either. He resigned about 2 weeks ago. So that, put it this way, the Browns are trying to get a lead PR person right now. Do you think anybody's running to get that job? Do you think they're going to have to overpay for somebody to, because I mean, the Johnny Manziel thing, and well, I'm sure we'll get into it. It's rubbing a lot of people in Cleveland the wrong way, whether it's the money up to his ears, yelling and screaming. You know, this is a blue collar town, and I got to say this, because the Browns have been out of the spotlight for so long, they've lost the younger generation. You know, the team left in the mid-90s, comes back in 99. And if you're 30 years old, you don't know the positives of what it is to be a Cleveland Browns fan. The drafting of Johnny Manziel has made a lot of those younger millennials, if you want to call them, into the Browns because Johnny's young and he's the thing. But I got to tell you, the last month or so has just made the whole Johnny thing really a situation that makes you scratch your head because I don't know if the Browns are prepared for this. As I said, the PR department's gone right now. You have a first-time owner who's still, in my opinion, learning the trade. You have a first-time GM who's been in the league for a long time, but it's different when you're in the lead. and you have another first-time head coach who was coaching high school 10 years ago. Makes for a lot of variables that make you scratch your head.
You know, case in point to what you're talking about, losing the young generation of fans, we were just looking at every team's three most memorable plays. ESPN Sports Nation is doing a poll for every team.
Yeah.
Two of the Browns plays occurred 1964 or earlier, and the third one was the fumble, which was a negative play.
Right.
So there was no positive, memorable play in the last 50 years that they could put in that poll, which I found pretty telling.
It totally makes sense. It made me cringe when you said it, but I mean, that's where the Browns are right now. And I think, you know, and I said that to Jimmy Haslam when he first got the team. You know, he brought a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of people were excited that he was coming in because it was a new day. I know Jacksonville, they've got a new scoreboard. Not as much has been made of the same thing here in Cleveland. Our stadium is very cookie cutter. Was put together very fast back in 98 just because they got the team. And it's one of the worst stadiums in the NFL, to be honest. And I'll give Jimmy Haslam this. He's putting his money where his mouth is. He's putting new things. He's trying to make the stadium more state-of-the-art. But they do have an issue with the younger generation. And if they don't start winning in the next couple of years, they're going to lose, a whole decade or not more of young fans that could have been fans of their team. We see more Steeler jerseys, more Raven jerseys, more, you know, Aaron Rodgers jerseys. You know, you can throw the name out there. We see those jerseys amongst our young kids more than we see Browns jerseys. And that's a problem. You know, the NFL is all about, you know, it's all about Sunday, but it's also about selling those jerseys and the memorabilia, and the Browns have that issue right now.
And one of the guys that could have changed that history of not having anything recent to be memorable is Josh Gordon. I mean, this guy is an elite-level talent in this league with what he showed during the second half of last season. It doesn't look like they're going to have him for 2014. What is your reaction to just the last couple months in this Josh Gordon saga, now looking like he's going to be suspended for the year and been arrested twice in the meantime?
Yeah, it's a sad story. And I've been against – I'll go back to the beginning of bringing Josh Gordon in. Let me say this. I've done some radio and television with him. He seems to be, when you're face-to-face, a good kid. He doesn't have good people around him. He doesn't make sound decisions. I'm not saying anything you guys probably haven't figured out with his track record. But from the moment they drafted him in the second round of the supplemental draft, I've been against it. They drafted him that year because that was the year that Randy Lerner was selling the team. The general manager at the time, Tom Heckert, made a rash decision because they felt like they had to make a splash that year to keep their jobs. Well, it didn't work. And because you've changed ownership, because you've changed general managers now three times since he's come in, you've changed coaches three times since he's come in, since Josh Gordon became a Brown, there has not been one way to handle him. I know when Tom Heckert came in, they put a support group around him. They set people up to be around him. But with all the constant change, there hasn't been anyone to really take Josh under their arms and really show him how to be an adult. He doesn't know how, guys. His decision-making is awful. Now, in saying that, his ability is unloaned like anyone else. I talk to Michael Irving all the time. Michael Irving talks to him once or twice a week. It's not that people aren't reaching out to him and help him. He doesn't want to make the right decisions. And the fight here in Cleveland, and I did a show yesterday, and I'll be honest, I feel like Chris Carter feels. I feel like you have to let him go. I've had people around me tell me that when the Browns selected him and basically handed him $4 million, it almost made him feel like all the nonsense he did in college, whether it's getting arrested in the Taco Bell line because he fell asleep with marijuana on him, whether it's getting kicked out of Baylor, getting kicked out of Utah. They rewarded him basically for being an ass in college, and it never came through to him that he had to grow up. This is the fifth offseason in a row that he's gone through some kind of off-the-field problems. The situation's getting worse. I think the Browns are and here's the thing. The Browns during this draft with Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, every time they drafted a guy, and this talks about Manziel as well, every time they drafted a guy, they said he plays like a Brown, he studies like a Brown. Well, being a Brown is getting arrested and pulled over every 3 weeks. I don't want to be a part of the team. And I know there's a lot of players that feel the same way. The sad part is his talent is unbelievable. I mean, you guys got a guy like this down there. You can't replace his talent. So there's a lot of people in Cleveland that say, well, let's be patient. Let's wait on him. To me, if you want to put a program together the right way, you got to cut bait at some point in time because you see what's going on with Johnny Manziel. If they don't, you know, I've always had coaches tell me it's easier to be tough in the beginning than to start off being easy and then try to be tough on guys later on. The team is paying attention to what is going on with Josh Gordon, because a lot of the players, a lot of the veteran guys added up to here, and they're sick of waiting and defending on.
Andre Knott with WTAM 1100, WEWS Channel 5 in Cleveland on Twitter, at Dre Knott, D-R-E-K-N-O-T-T. Andre, let's get to Johnny Manziel here. Is it more off-field stuff than they expected? Should they knew what they were getting when they drafted him? And the most recent picture, to me, the stack of money, the clowning around at the pool, he's a young guy, nothing there. Rolling up the $20 bill, there are not many uses for a rolled-up $20 bill. We all know one of them. I mean, is this the one that's going to come under the most scrutiny with him?
I would think so, because after the last OTA practice, the team basically said to him, I know the ownership came back into town, and they said, look, enough's enough. You know, let's settle down. Let's be big boys about it. But, you know, I had a scout tell me from a really good team when the Browns selected him, they said, good luck trying to control him. The kid has never been controlled. He comes from a wealthy family. And this is just who he is. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, you guys know how it is in this business. You get, you know, how many times you get the local bartender or the local, water guy or, you know, whoever else goes, hey, I saw this guy do this. So we've heard different things. The crazy thing about Johnny is that he's done none of these things in Cleveland. When he's been here, he's an angel. It's when he leaves town, he hasn't been in any of the bars down, you know, in Cleveland, Ohio. He hasn't been really any of the restaurants. When he's here, he works his tail off and he plays football. And I think a lot like Josh Gordon, and I hate to put him in the same category, he almost pulls the wool over your eyes because he says the right things when you're in front of him. As I said, he stays out of the establishments here in town. But when he leaves, you know, it seems like all bets are off. Now, his teammates from Texas A&M have told me, when the season starts, this isn't the Johnny you'll get. But I got to tell you, for the Browns, they have an image problem. And this isn't helping. And I know that this was a discussion between the, you know, management and the ownership when the draft came along. I know some in ownership wanted them to select him with fourth overall pick. And Ray Farmer, the general manager, said, hey, that's not how we should put this team together. Now, we all know what happened and why they selected him where they selected him, because they felt it, because he fell in the draft and they felt like it was the perfect time. But there's some concern here in Cleveland. And the other concern is this. The guy that's going to start, most likely, Brian Hoyer, he's the complete opposite, guys. You know, he's working out every single day. He's running in, I live three blocks away from him. He's running the neighborhood. He's at the facility every day. He's hanging out with the offensive linemen, going fishing and hunting and things like that. And, you know, you guys know, this isn't college anymore. And I think that's the story that's got to get through to Johnny. The guys respect him, but they don't respect him as a player yet because they don't know if he's taking it serious. And I think that could be a problem. At quarterback, you got to be a leader. And right now, there's no one on this team that wants to be led by Johnny Manziel.
What is the level of frustration, though, when you look at this roster and the way it's put together right now, some of the moves they made on the defensive side of the ball? I, at least as an outsider looking at this Cleveland Brown team, feel like they're close, especially on the defensive side. I think they're going to be very good on defense. If they had all the pieces in with Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron, they got two excellent offensive linemen, top of the league guys in Joe Thomas and Alex Mack. The quarterback situation is whatever it is. If Johnny Manziel was in line, is that more frustrating for Browns fans? Because it feels like a lot of the moves have been right, and these couple may be bringing everything back down to that Browns level we've seen.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, the old Browns saying is you take two steps forward, you take three back. And then you're exactly right. They have a nucleus. Defensively, this team literally could be a top five defense, and no one here would be surprised. Bringing Pettine in with his scheme that he kind of put together with Coach Ryan, it looks like it fits the talent. This defense has some players on it. Joe Hayden is a top five corner, even though I'm sure everybody in Jacksonville remembers Cecil Shorts putting that double move on him last November. It was good for Cecil, though. I love Cecil. I did his high school games when he was here in Cleveland. He's a great kid. They do have some players. They've got, you know, Dante Whitner comes in as a safety. Dansby's at linebacker. They've got some defensive linemen that can get after. The defense can be exciting. Offensively, they're going to the scheme that Mike Shanahan we have Mike Shanahan's son as the offensive coordinator, but they're going to run that same, zone scheme. And they've got a couple running backs that can tote the football. There are a lot of things that are exciting about this team, but you hit on something. The offense can't be the offense they want it to be. Jordan Cameron's not Jordan Cameron without Josh Gordon. You know what I mean? I think and Jordan has said that in so many words. Jordan's still not a finished product. He has a chance to be special as well, but he's still a little rough around the edges. He's a guy that played basketball at BYU and USC, not football. Until his last year. So he's still, you know, he's got some Antonio Gates early, on because he's as athletic as he gets, but he's, you know, the blocking stuff, not really his thing. They're hoping in this scheme, they won't be asking him to power over defensive linemen and linebackers that he'll be able to do that. But really, guys, they don't have anyone else receiver wise that can really open the game up. They signed Miles Austin in the offseason. We all know Miles has dealt with, you know, leg injuries constantly. And then this is just a lot of wild cards offensively of what will happen at quarterback and receiver. So, yeah, absolutely. It's some frustration because this is a big year. There's a lot of new faces, a lot of new people. And I just wonder, and I've watched this so often, and I've been so close. First-time head coaches get overwhelmed sometimes here in Cleveland because of all these other things. And Mike Fenton's going to earn his money not so much on game day, but how he gets these guys to come together as one and keep themselves off TMZ and all those other places and really become a team. And I think that's why at some point in time this week or in the next 2 weeks before camp starts, they're going to have to make a decision on how they're going to deal with Josh Gordon. Rather than wait for the NFL to deal with it, I think they have to deal with it so they send a message to their locker room. Because if they don't, you have training camp starting with a lot of people looking over, you know, looking behind them going, you know, how's this going to be run? Hey, first-time head coaches to me are like substitute teachers until they prove they're worthy of the job. And Mike Pettine has still got to prove that he's worthy of it at this point.
Yeah, and the Browns, look, they picked up a lot of draft capital for the future on draft day. But for Justin Gilbert's sake, I hope that Sammy Watkins does not have a 10-touchdown rookie season because I think that, you know, that comparison's going to be made. It's hard to shine as a rookie cornerback.
You're right.
We'll see how that all works out. Andre, you're about out of time here, but just kind of an overview. There is some talent on this roster, and maybe the most talented guy in Josh Gordon will be missing, but particularly on defense, how good can the Browns be in 2014?
They could be a team. They can be anywhere from a team that wins 9 games, and that's a big jump for the Browns, considering they've lost 11 games or more in the last 5 seasons. They really have the talent to be an 8-9-game win team. Problem is, though, they're playing that tough division. You guys know how the AFC North works. Remember the name Terrence West, rookie running back for your fantasy geek? He's a guy that maybe, you know, you can get low, but he's a big running back with quick, nifty feet. And when this offense could be a big-time player if everything falls his way. Just a name to remember down the road. But I really do think there's some excitement to this team. I just hope that they can get the defense that's put together right now out there in the beginning of September without a big injury. And we should have it'll be an interesting year. Because Mike Pettine is an aggressive coach. They want to be aggressive on offense. And I think Browns fans are looking forward to that aggressive nature.
Andre Knott, WTAM 1100 and WEWS Channel 5 in Cleveland, longtime Browns sideline reporter as well. Andre, enjoy the dwindling days of summer and as much as you can. You probably don't have a break with all the stuff going on up there in Cleveland right now.
But... No, I gotta go to a cupcake shop now. the latest cupcake news on LeBron.
Send me some coconut cupcakes, brother. All right, we appreciate
you got it, brother.
We'll talk to you down
Take
the line.
Care, guys.
All right, there he goes. Andre Knott up in Cleveland with the Cleveland Browns. I tweeted out what he said, and somebody replied, "What?" with a question mark. He said, "Tell me if I'm wrong. The direct quote here." At quarterback, you need to be a leader, and right now, nobody on the Browns wants to be led by Johnny Manziel. That's what Andre said, right?
That's what he said.
And it basically, he's saying, like, Brian Hoyer's the kind of guy that is going to garner respect in the locker room. And this guy, Manziel, they're a little bit cautious. You know, is he going to be able to deliver? Look, if he can deliver, Tony, when the bullets are live, so to speak, when it's game time,
sure.
Nobody's going to care.
No.
No one will care. Or if they do, they'll bite their tongue and they'll get with the program. Johnny Manziel will become, a thing in the NFL, much like he was in college, and no one will give a rip. But if he doesn't, boy, has he made it easy for the detractors and his teammates as well to question his approach to the game in his rookie offseason.
Yeah, and we'll see. Look, when they get into training camp, Hoyer's going to be getting the first team snaps, and we'll see what happens as they go through camp and the preseason games. And look, it was interesting listening to Andre there talk about the attitude of the other players towards Johnny Manziel and the attitude of Johnny Manziel when he's in Cleveland compared to when he's anywhere else right now. And that was kind of the same thing as his attitude leading up to the draft. The Manziel we all knew during that last year in college, that last year and a half, disappeared for a couple months. He was always clean-shaven. He was doing things the right way in front of everybody leading up to the draft. And as soon as he got drafted, the weekends became party time again for Johnny. And all of that stuff went away. So maybe, you know, the wool got pulled over the Browns' eyes a little bit in exactly what Johnny Manziel was. The partying, drinking, doing all that stuff, who cares? He's young. He can go do that. A rolled-up dollar bill in your hand is completely different. And the reaction should be completely different from the Browns players and fans.
Honestly, the question should be, were you snorting cocaine in the bathroom
right.
with a $20 bill? And if not, what were you doing with a rolled up $20 bill?
Exactly.
Give us a reasonable explanation. All right, we got a break. We'll come back. Take a look at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking you today, which is the most memorable play in Jaguar team history. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Play on, playa. What's this song? What'd I miss? Huh? How's this fit with the theme, Lauren? What do you got?
This is AC/DC, Playing with Girls.
Oh, Playing with Girls. See, there's a joke in there. Dempsey didn't know a thing about Playing with Girls. Right?
You said it, not me.
It's all right. I know it's coming. Let's get it out of the way. Rip the Band-Aid right off. It's fine. Yeah, I really reached a point where I can laugh at myself almost more than my detractors laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite 100%, but I'm getting in the ballpark, and the list is long, however. Tony, today we went through the entire National Football League, the most memorable plays in every franchise's history. I'm going to give us a resounding A+, because I don't believe there was a team we didn't have at least one of their three finalist plays.
And we did well.
Several of them we had the single most famous play. The ones they put for the Jags, by the way, ESPN Sports Nation on their poll.
Was it Garrard's run? I'm sure was on there.
Of course. I say of course, but I know what's on the
list. I would still think the Morton miss.
Poor John goes, the Hail Mary.
I would still think the Morton miss.
No, it's not.
And
the Morton miss is on there.
Fred Taylor against Miami.
And they had Brunell to Jimmy Smith. See, I would put Brunell's run up there in the Denver playoff game, but the touchdown to Jimmy Smith in that same game is the one that they went with. Either
sure.
way, I mean, look, to me, I think the Hail Mary or the missed field goal by Morton Anderson is it. I mean, it's the one that launched an era of Jaguar football. I mean, who knows if they don't make the playoffs and don't have that success that year, you know, and have that to build off of the next several years. What becomes of that football team?
Right.
Maybe they have the same amount of success. Maybe they're hungrier. Maybe they win a Super Bowl. I don't know. Nobody knows. But you certainly would have been deprived a lot of playoff memories from that year. No question. So, taking a look today at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, Tony, give us a sampling, if you would, of the Twitter responses we got on this.
All right, here's what we got from Kevin. Freddie T running over Mike Dawson, looking back while running into the end zone. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Remember it well.
From a different Kevin, any big Freddie T run, he brought the energy to that stadium. Hashtag Jaguars today. Fred Taylor's big touchdown run against Miami in the playoffs to send Marino into retirement. Hashtag Jaguars today. That from Sean, from Peter. My eruption moment was the Hudson block and return touchdown versus the Steelers and Scobie's 59-yarder to beat Indy. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Matt, it's got to be the Garrard scramble to beat Pitt in Pittsburgh. Hashtag playoff win. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Paul, hashtag Jaguars today. Fred's first touch. Wasn't bad. From Brock, got to be Garrard's 4th-and-2 scramble to beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Joey, Anderson missing that 30-yard field goal. Imagine not having those playoff memories. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, has been and probably always will be Morton's miss. Pivotal moment in our history, and I was there. Hashtag Jaguars
well,
today.
Well, that puts it over the top. And I mean, Eric was in attendance.
Finally, from Jason, Brunell's scramble in 96. That Denver defense is probably still having nightmares about that beauty. Hashtag Jaguars today.
I wonder where the Jaguars rank. If you took Bronco fans and said, all right, list the teams you hate, starting at the top, probably be the Raiders, the Chiefs, the Chargers, simply because they're in the division. They have
sure.
more history with them. But the Raiders and Chiefs would be at the top. I'm guessing the Raiders, because who likes the Raiders? Certainly not the Pro Football Talk power rankings, which,
right.
by the way, we told you yesterday, Oakland was 32, Miami was 31, and Tennessee was 30. So,
hey!
Jags, you're moving up, and you're in the 20s at least.
That number's starting with 2.
I like it. But how far would you have to go for Denver? Who else has, you know, ripped Denver's heart out? I mean, that was gut-wrenching. That's pre-Elway winning a Super Bowl. We've got the team to do it. And now, mitigated by the fact that they won 2
sure.
over the next few years. But I would think top 5, I would I would guess they'd be in the top five.
Bare minimum, they're top eight, you would think. I mean, they're in the top quarter.
I mean, there may be, look, I can't get inside the head of a Bronco fan.
Right, but it, in a league of 32 teams, being in the top quarter of teams that tick you off.
Where do the Seahawks go after the thrashing? Do you hate teams like that who put the thrashing on you? The Redskins put the thrashing on the Broncos in the Super Bowl. The 49ers, I believe, put the thrashing on Denver. Pretty much everyone put the thrashing on Denver back in the day. Do you hate those teams? Or you just realize, man, we weren't good enough to be in the Super Bowl, and this guy named Elway said, hop on board and let me, you know, ride this horse-faced quarterback to the world championship.
Maybe. I mean, I bet there's a lot of hate for the Patriots just because they're the Patriots right now. Everybody hates New England. I mean, that's just the way it works with all the success they've had here recently. So they're probably in towards the top of that list. But, yeah, I mean, look, that was 96. If you're a Broncos fan, that's one that you're like, we should have won a title. We should have won the Super Bowl that year, and those stupid Jaguars, those upstart Jags, came up here and got in our way. And that's the way they look at it. It's not that they beat them, it's that they got in our way of something historical where they could have potentially won three in a row.
No question. Now, I don't think they would have, because I think Elway would have rode into the sunset probably a year earlier.
Maybe.
If he wins two, does he come back for that last one? Maybe he does. Maybe they feel they have a chance to do something unprecedented. Do you still have that burning desire at that point? I mean, because you could argue, look, after two, could you come back and play one more year with this team that's, you know, won a couple of Super Bowls? Maybe you could.
Sure.
And get it done. And, you know, he took the victory lap instead. I'm not blaming him. On Facebook, got these Jesse Green. I went with David Garrard scrambling in Pittsburgh for the first down to set up Scobie for the game winner in the playoffs. Steve Shapiro went with Morton's miss. Chris Wayne said, hey, Jesse Green, don't forget to mention the heinous Vince Manawai hold. That's I thought it was Meester on the hold.
Oh, who cares?
Not even half the offensive line.
If it doesn't get called, it wasn't holding.
Hashtag Jaguars
Steeler Nation.
Today. Kevin Carter, I don't know if it's that Kevin Carter. Any huge Fred Taylor run, he brought energy to the stadium with every touch. Derek Klobaka, unfortunately nothing after 99. More lowlights than highlights. Too many letdowns. The shutout against the Texans in 04 with a playoff berth on the line. Losing three in a row to finish the 06 season. 07 was nice. Most notably, Garrard's run. Also, MJD's return early in the Pittsburgh game. Rasheen's interceptions as well. That's it after 99. I would agree. After 99, 07 was the year for you. But
sure, yeah, it was. We won a playoff game that year in the city. So
right.
That would be the year.
That was nice.
Yeah.
But Richard Rainier, I think that's how you pronounce it. Mark Brunell flipping to the end zone versus the Broncos. Seen that. 62-7 the whole game. John Shannon, 60-yard Hail Mary pass. Was it 60? What was the distance on that? Was it 60? Was it 50?
I thought it was 50.
Yeah, either way. It was a heave. And, Chris Brown says, funny, our best play was a missed field goal back in the day. Thanks, Morton Anderson. Why not? Thank him. Because, like somebody said on Twitter, where would you be? You wouldn't have all those playoff memories.
Right.
And that's kind of the gold in your Jaguar fandom's Fort Knox is the 96 postseason above all. I mean, the 96 postseason, even though you ultimately lost, isn't nearly, there's no bitterness like the 99 postseason where
no.
You felt like not that it's your birthright, but that it was your expectation. You're at least getting to the Super Bowl.
And whenever we ask these questions, you find out the division between, I guess I'd call them the first and second generation Jaguar fans.
We have a second generation. It's nice.
You have the young guys that have been watching
the Bold City
for the past 10 years or so, really. Look, you see the separation between them because that first generation of fans is always going to point to 96 and Morton's miss and the memories of that playoff run. That's it for this franchise. And that second generation, the only taste of success they've had is David Garrard on 4th-and-2. You know, that's it. So those are the two big moments in Jaguar history that everyone points to. And it's always, I feel like, we hear from the younger fans, it's David Garrard. And we hear from that little group of older fans, we hear 96 and what happened that year, which is fine. It's great. Hopefully, sometime in the next 5 years, we can give them something else to celebrate.
By the way, to save myself from a bunch of tweets, I realize that some of the Bold City Brigade may be older than, say, 21 or 22 years old and may not be second generation. But I guarantee you, if you're, put it this way, if you're 22 years old right now, you're a second generation Jaguar fan.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
That is.
That's a good
thing.
It's
a great thing.
That's what they need, a bunch of those. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Andre Knott for joining us and dropping the information.
Josh Scopey.
About the Cleveland Browns. What'd Scopey do?
He just tweeted, hashtag Jaguars today.
Atta
the 59-yarder that guy kicked against the Colts, I was there. It was neato.
Nice. See? I love it. So was I, Josh, and we share that together.
I think he wants a T-shirt.
You know what? Favorite that one, Tony. ask that guy, Josh, what size he wears,
right.
And we'll hook him up with a Jaguars Today T-shirt. It was neato, I recall. All right, that'll do it for us, the boys of XL Primetime. Coming up, Joe C. Hacker and T-Wig on the other side. For Joe Fortunato, for Lauren Brooks, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. I'm Mark Long from the Associated Press. Back with us tomorrow here on Jaguars Today, coming to you live every day from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios, live at Everbank Field. XL Primetime next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.